This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's talk about meat, because I know.
I did the sex conference last weekend, and I did Digi Sexuality this week, and if you open with let's talk about meat, it's been an interesting week for me.
It is, actually, now come think of it. Yeah, might be the wrong way to start the show. Also, I think, because for those people at this hour, you may have just had your breakfast, and you're maybe about an hour and a half away from your lunch, or maybe 2 hours away from your lunch, so just to beware, Matt may go really gross in this part of the show.
Yeah, I may go rogue.
Yeah. Anyways, so the thing is, because there's an article that recently came out about Missouri is working on a legislation against lab-grown alternatives. Because more and more Americans are now substituting their meat in their diets with plant-based alternatives. And Missouri lawmakers have introduced this meat industry-friendly law that would impose stringent labeling requirements for these lab-grown meats. We've spoken about these lab-grown meats and how they're, you know, it's a substitute for you know, poultry and livestock itself. And now what they're trying to do here is to actually separate that and say that this lab-grown meat isn't real meat. And I'm like, okay. I don't see that point. It's more of like, it's like trying to save a traditional business from going out of business. Instead of trying to, you know, separate the identification of like what's meat isn't meat.
I see this as being very much a protectionist measure. This is kind of an anti-technology measure. Now, I'm not saying that lab-grown meat is ready to be given to the public on mass scale. We still need to do more research. We still need to do more testing. And, of course, it is still very, very expensive.
And gross.
speaking as someone who I'm not vegetarian currently, but I eat meat maybe once or twice a week. I think that makes me a flexitarian. I don't really care what it's called. But I made a conscious decision to eat less meat, partly because of the cruelty involved, partly because of the resources that are consumed, because it takes a lot more energy to raise meat than you get out of it. You use more cereal production to grow a pound of meat than the energy that you receive from consuming that. So it is actually a net loss. So when you look at booming populations, when you look at people with rising prosperity who are moving from diets that maybe had meat like I do once a week or once in a while, but certainly not every day, and those people are now starting to consume meat all the time, we can't actually balance those resources. When you look at the amount of space that we would need to house the human beings and then to grow the crops that feed the meat that we raise, that also requires a lot of land. So those things don't stack up. So when you look at a kind of logical perspective, this kind of lab-grown meat, yes, it is kind of gross and disgusting.
For now, but
it does make sense. We have changed the way cereal crops are raised. Now, we've done that not just with genetic modification, but also with traditional crossbreeding techniques. And we have yields now that are, you know, literally 10 times what they were 100 or 200 years ago. We only have that with the adoption of technology. Now, when it comes to raising meat, the only way to increase the yield of meat is mainly to use hormone treatments and things like that to grow larger animals. We can bypass all of that by growing tissue cultures in a lab, even if it does sound gross. But it sounds gross to people, but the idea of an animal that's happily walking around a field being turned into your steak is even more gross.
It's probably because you're used to it, because you know it's been done for hundreds and thousands of years, right?
Exactly. And you hear these stories, especially about sort of kids who are brought up in cities and they're taken out into the countryside for the first time, and they point at a cow and say to the teacher, "What's that?" And they have no idea that milk and cheese and butter and meat all come from those animals. They think that things are served, you know, they think that chicken nuggets are made somewhere, which potentially they are. But
could be in the future.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. We probably should be growing chicken nuggets in a lab rather than on the ground.
Actually, if we do grow chicken nuggets in the lab, it will probably be a lot more healthier than what we're actually getting now, because you could actually artificially, you know, make it taste as good as, you know, a grown livestock or poultry meat.
Of course, you can change the taste, but you can also change the balances of fat and tissue as well. So you can end up with meat that's actually a lot more tender and has a lower fat content. So, you know, there are benefits to doing this that we can't really do with animals at the moment.
But this law is completely, it's like an anti-tech, like
I mean, this is much more about making it difficult for people who make artificial meat to register. So this is purely and simply a kind of regulatory response, which is designed to kind of perpetuate the cycle of large-scale industrial animal farming.
Now, there's a growing number of Americans who are choosing to adopt this cruelty-free diets and becoming vegetarians and vegans. And actually, the market researchers estimate that total sales of dairy and meat alternatives would reach about $25 billion in just 2 years. That's a very short space of time.
It is. And my wife has gone, again, largely vegan. She's been vegetarian for years and years. So she's been living like this for a long time. One of the reasons I don't join her is vegan cheese.
Vegan cheese.
Yeah, that not quite perfected yet. But, wow. You know, I would embrace that kind of diet a lot more, I think, if we did have the alternatives of cruelty-free meat. And if we have no reason to not have cruelty-free meat, then we should have cruelty-free meat. If we can prove that that lab-grown meat is safe and it's sustainable and it requires fewer resources to produce, I really don't see why anyone would be passing laws like this. And I would hope that the public would respond to kind of knock them down.
The definition of lab-grown meat, is that actual real meat that, you know, what about, you know, vegetarians and vegans? Are they, you know...
Well, I mean, I've had this discussion with my wife. My argument being that it's not from an animal, so why would it be a problem? But she's saying it's of an animal and you're consuming something that's of an animal. So we haven't really come to any terms on that, and I don't want to bore everyone with that argument. But certainly to my mind, to the way that I worked through all of this, I would see that as a good response and a good way for people to get protein into their diet that didn't require cruelty to animals.
Thank you for keeping the domestic issues at home and, you know, not on the radio.
Yes, and I haven't gone rogue either.
That's very good. We'll be right back with more after this. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage, and this is Geek Squawks. Matt, the longest heated cycle path in Western Europe and possibly the world is set to be built in a very first world country that I love so much, Holland. It's going to be a 1.7-kilometer cycle highway. And it's the longest heated cycle path. What is this heated cycle path, Matt? Because we're here in Asia where we don't understand what's, you know, hot and cold. We just get rain and sun.
Okay, I have to put my hand up and admit that this week I have spent a lot of time watching dash cam videos, particularly black ice dash cam videos. It came originally from a story I was reading in the New Yorker, and they mentioned this guy who is a weather researcher, and he researches on how black ice forms and the kind of threat that it poses. And he also posts videos, not cars whatever.
Of course, yeah.
His are quite tasteful. The ones I was watching weren't. So I've been watching all of these kind of black ice videos. And then this story came up. And obviously, it's dangerous enough for cars on icy roads. Mm. For bicycles, it's incredibly dangerous. Motorcycles as well. Obviously, as you said, in Malaysia, that's not really an issue that people face here.
Yeah.
But black ice is this layer of invisible ice. So it's the same color as the tarmac. It's not actually black.
Right. So it's completely black because clear. Of the tarmac.
Yeah,
right.
So you can't see it, especially at night. There's no reflection back from it as
because
the tarmac reflects it. So literally, you can be going along like a salted or gritted highway, and everything's fine, and you just hit this patch, and everything just
goes.
Lose control. Yeah. Now, we already know that Holland is a nation of cyclists.
Yeah.
So this idea for the cycle highways, they're calling it, enables cyclists to go out safely all year round. So it's slightly heated so that it will melt the ice and allow cyclists to go. And I know it sounds a little bit kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but it's actually really clever, though.
But it's actually really, really clever, yeah.
Yeah, because it will be kept warm by the residual heat from a local paper plant.
Yeah, so yeah, it's a case of recycling. And we've seen other things on the show as well with, I think there was a cycle path that was tested in Cambridge, near where I'm from in the UK, which would use the kinetic energy generated to power lights. And the surface also had this kind of glow-in-the-dark aspect to it, which would illuminate the thing. So we're seeing a lot of technologies being used with the surfacing of roads. We're also seeing technologies that reflect heat. So I think in Japan and parts of the US, they're trialing tarmac that will reflect heat back up so that the road doesn't get too hot, because obviously that can cause the surface of the road to melt. So this is part of a kind of a wider movement to change the way that we are journeying.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds like one of those first world luxuries, and maybe to an extent it is.
It is.
But actually, if you can get people out of their cars during the winter and get them onto bikes, that's still a fantastic thing, because again, a lot of the time during this kind of cold weather, pollution actually increases as well. So the emissions from cars and things can be in higher concentrations because it's harder for it to go up into the higher atmosphere. The colder air keeps it down towards the surface of the town and the city. So there are kind of environmental benefits to this as well.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I mentioned about why it's like a very first world kind of thing, not just because of the whole recycling of the heat from the power plant, but the concerns that they have in building this. It's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea. And they're looking into the finer details that we don't seem to raise when we are, you know, thinking of building, whether it's a bicycle alley or a motorbike alley. So the concerns that they have is that frogs might actually find this warm path a little bit too comfortable, putting them and the cyclists in danger. So what they're going to do is they're going to monitor the impact on local wildlife, which may include also, you know, water birds and beavers.
Well, yeah, of course.
Wow.
They are also looking for sources of heat during the winter. So, yeah, you don't want this. I mean, I hadn't thought of beavers. Obviously, birds can, by and large, get out of the way, I hadn't actually thought of basking beavers like lying in your path. But then, you know, having said that, when I cycle through my local park in Putrajaya, sort of late in the evening, there are loads and loads of monitor lizards that are lying on the cycle path as well, because they're basking in the heat that's being released from the daytime. So I guess this is just something that we have to put up. And, you know, the monitor lizards are bigger than I am, so I'm generally more scared than they are. So,
Well, you know. It kind of helps you to cycle faster, to pedal faster then, right? Because, you know.
Well, except they kind of block the entire path. So you're just like, oh no, what do I do now? He has to move or I have to go back.
Anyways, Apple, talking about going back, Apple may have to go back to the drawing board, because the latest iOS 11.3 software update is causing iPhone 8 devices with third-party repaired screens to just stop working at all. Like, wow. What's going on here, Apple? So apparently users have had their screen repair performed by a third party rather than Apple themselves on their iPhone 8 found that this latest update has stopped the touchscreen from just working, and you just can't do anything. The screen continues to display the home screen once it's been updated, but you cannot interact with it, effectively just making your iPhone 8 unusable without any warning from Apple.
I know. I do find a lot of this very frustrating.
It's happened before.
Well, it's happened before. It's not the first time that it's happened. And the chances are it's not intentional.
It's just a
compatibility issue. But it does go back to this whole thing with Facebook as well in terms of the power that we're giving to companies. Mm. We buy the device from them. We buy the software from them. And then if something goes wrong with that machine, we're not allowed to try and fix it ourselves or take it to someone else. We have to take it to the official repair stop. And repairing Apple products is massively, massively expensive.
Especially here somewhere when we don't have, you know, like an official Apple store.
But even generally, I mean, it is very, very expensive. It is much cheaper to go to, you know, one of these mom and pop shops that will just replace it for you. I have an issue with the MacBook that's sitting in front of me right now. The spacebar sticks, which should be a really easy thing to do. When I took it to the official Apple repair shop, they told me it would cost me 1,400 ringgit because they have to replace the entire
keyboard.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I still don't even understand why a new keyboard would cost 1,500 because it's just a bunch of keys. And, you know, and it cost me 120 ringgit just to get them to tell me what was wrong and what it would cost to repair. And obviously I said no.
Yeah. It's you know, just 120 ringgit gone.
Yeah. So, you know, now I just hit it with compressed air every day and every few days it gums up again and I start again. But, you know, I've taken it to the other repair places and they can't do anything either because the MacBook is pretty much impossible to open.
Also, recently, the FTC in the US, they came out and made a statement that all those, you know, those warning stickers that we will have in our old devices that, you know, if you remove the sticker, warranty void if removed, right? So apparently, they've now deemed those stickers as illegal. Yeah. You can actually, if the product is under warranty, you can actually still send it to a third-party shop. And if you get it fixed and it has a different problem, your warranty is not void. So when I was a kid, you know, the PlayStation 1s and the PlayStation 2s, you know, and all those, you know, Game Boy devices, they all had those stickers that I was just so afraid of, you know, peeling them off. Because it says warranty void removed. And now you go like, hang on a minute, they were deceiving me. And they will actually say, they said six companies are guilty of this. They didn't name the six companies, but one of them could also be Apple, because although they don't use stickers, but Apple does discourages you from, you know, getting someone else repair,
and
which is against the law, because if it's under warranty, you should allowed to be sent it to anywhere.
I remember that it was rumored that another company that I won't mention the name of, if you used a charger that was not one of the official ones or hadn't had the didn't have the certification, you know, the proper certificate from whatever company that was, they were able to check from your battery cycles whether you had used one of these reputable ones. And not necessarily that they did do that to anyone, but they had the discretion to not extend the warranty if someone had used an unapproved charger. And you just think, this is absolutely insane. These are things that we are spending enormous sums of money on. I mean, the latest iPhone 10 or whatever is literally worth as much money as the computer I'm looking at in front of me now. And that is ridiculous and insane, especially when it has a pretty much all glass construction that is begging to be broken, and repairing it is so fantastically expensive.
And also, you know, we like you mentioned, we spend so much and they already sort of force us with a two-year life cycle. So like, you know, we spend so much and then every 2 years we have to spend that same amount again. But in between anything sports, I have to go back to these people and spend a fortune again. Like, I only have two kidneys here, guys. Like,
yeah, exactly. Although having said that, this update that has decommissioned people's third-party screens has actually enabled people to extend the capacity of their batteries. So I was pleased to see that on my phone, although it does make it quite clear that if you decide to override the safety settings, you may well damage the phone. But, you know, at least now I have a bit more control over a device that is mine.
Anyways, GeekTunes, what do we have for today, Matt?
We have the return of Griff Rhys from Super Furry Animals.
The first time we played it was when we first started the show, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, yeah. He was one of the first people we played. He's one of my favorite artists. He always does something weird and unusual, and he doesn't disappoint this time. He's done in the past kind of psychedelic stuff. He's done electronica. This time he's gone all 1970s orchestral pop, and it's as strange as it sounds. This is Griff Rhys with Frontier Man.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.